studying Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, and we're in the seventh chapter, text 44 today. This is the chapter the son of Drona punished. Sarhasyo Dhanurvedaha Savisargo Pasamayamaha Ashtagramaschabhavata Shikshito Yadanugrahat Sarahasyo Dhanurveda Savisargo Pasamayamaha Ashtagramaschabhavata Shikshito Yadanugrahat. Please chant. Somebody? Sarahasyaha, confidential, Dhanurveda, knowledge in the art of manipulating bows and arrows. Savisarga, releasing, upasamyamaha, controlling, astra, weapons, gramaha, all kinds of, cha, and bhavata, by yourself, shikshitaha, learned, yat, by whose, anugrahat, mercy of. Translation, purport, Srila Prabhupada. It was by Dronacharya's mercy that you learned the military art of throwing arrows and the confidential art of controlling weapons. Purport, Dhanurveda, or military science, was taught by Dronacharya with all its confidential secrets of throwing and controlling by Vedic hymns. Gross military science is dependent on material weapons, but finer than that is the art of throwing the arrows saturated with Vedic hymns, which act more effectively than gross material weapons like machine guns or atomic bombs. The control is by Vedic mantras or the transcendental science of sound. It is said in the Ramayana that Maharaj Dasharath, the father of Lord Shri Ram, used to control arrows by sound only. He could pierce his target with his arrow by only hearing the sound without seeing the object. So this is a finer military science than that of the gross material military weapons used nowadays. Arjuna was taught all this, and therefore Draupadi wished that Arjuna feel obliged to Acharya Drona for all these benefits. And in the absence of Dronacharya, his son was his representative. That was the opinion of the good lady Draupadi. It may be argued why Dronacharya, a rigid Brahmin, should be a teacher in military science. But the reply is that a Brahmin should become a teacher, regardless of what his department of knowledge is. A learned Brahmin should become a teacher, a priest, and a recipient of charity. A bona fide Brahmin is authorized to accept such professions. So, Dhanurveda, here's described in other places too, that it's actually the art of bows and arrows. But in general, it's the military science that is taught in the Vedas. And that, is, of course, is used in defense and in protection and in killing in so many different ways. And Srila Prabhupada said that, he said many times that the animal propensities are eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So we see here that this is just born into the living entity, especially in animalistic life. These things are always there. And it said, might for right, right? That it can be used to right things, to create justice in society. And we need that, of course. We need it. Actually, from day one, maybe not in the very beginning, Satya Yuga, but there is a global pandemic of pride and the contamination of the false ego, which makes everyone think that this is mine, that's yours, let's fight over it. This is, I'm the controller, I'm control over you. So it is there, it's there instinctively in the material world. But it used to be that the weapons in the right hands could create justice. But nowadays we see that the weapons are very easily bought over the counter. Over here at Latcher Lumber, you've got a whole arsenal of whatever you want in the way of weapons. And you just have to pay the money, pretty much. And then they get in the wrong, people's wrong hands, and then there's, you know, these hate crimes, and then innocent people in churches, innocent people in movie theaters, innocent people on the streets are killed. And it's such a shame. That isn't necessary. The justice is, but these injustices is not necessary. So we see that it's, unfortunately, the weapons are misused. A long time ago, I was listening to a class yesterday, that actually the kings would be out there with their weapons and actually be fighting. Has anyone ever been to the Jaipur City Palace and been to the museum? Come on, if anyone's, yeah. The minute you walk in the door, what is it? Pictures of the kings on the battlefield, big, huge armies with their elephants and everything. The whole museum is just about weapons. And it is so far out. I used to get lost in there. They don't have just big ones. They have little ones that are you put in your shoes, and when you kick somebody, this little dagger comes out. And then they have things that you sit on your coffee tables, and you open them up, and there's like little scissors that when you put them inside somebody, then they open up after they go in the person. I mean, there's every kind of weapon you could ever imagine. And these were actually used. They were used by the kshatriyas, and the kings at that time were real kshatriyas. Nothing like these days, where I'm sure they couldn't even pull a sword out. I bet they wouldn't be able to handle that. I have a book, it's called Maharaja's Jewels, and it's about the kings in the last couple hundred years of all the jewelry and their wardrobes that they had. And this was pretty much after the time of when they were out chopping people's heads off and the kings were out there doing everything. And it just showed the decline of that kshatriya nature. You know, soon they just all got bedecked out with all these jewels and sent their gems to France to have special things made. And it told the little history of it, had pictures of all the different kings and showed their wardrobes and how much money they spent on decorating their bodies. And then meanwhile sending everyone else out to fight. So that weaponry and the use of weapons pretty much disappeared over time. But if you ever go to Jaipur, you should visit that place. It's very, very interesting and quite entertaining to see that they really use these weapons, that they really were out there doing these type things. So there is a ray of arsenal described in this Ayurveda, Dhanurveda art, and pretty amazing arsenal. But Krishna was expert. He came here, what does it say, to annihilate the demons. So he came equipped with weapons. Actually, I'm in Los Angeles, they had the four, the lotus flower, the club, the disc, and the, what else is left? Conch shell. Big, big, huge ones. And so when you think of Vishnu and Krishna, you think, yes, those four emblems. Club, so, you know, these were, you know, the disc. These were used by Krishna, not only just those things, but he also used, he could use his finger if he wanted to, or he did. He actually used his hand to chop a few people's heads off. So he was out there doing this. So he was definitely the acharya of using these weapons. And even Lord Balaram, what did he use on Ramaharshana? Simply a little straw, killed him with like that. So for civilized persons, in the days of yore, there was Shastra. And from the Shastra, they would hear how to have proper justice, proper behavior, how to be civilized. And they would follow that. They would respect the Shastra, and there was a lot less violence. But then as people became degraded and more rough and more less gentle, then there's Astra, the weapons used to tame them. So we understand that in the Dhanurveda, they're called celestial weapons. Why? Because each demigod would preside over a certain weapon. And just like Agni would be in charge of all the fire weapons. You can imagine being on a battlefield and all of a sudden you're all of a sudden engulfed in a huge fire. What can you do, right? Or there's Varuna, he would have the, or Indra would have the clouds and the rain weapons, and then all of a sudden they would send a tsunami, a big flood right down in the battlefield. Can you imagine all of a sudden this big wave coming towards you would just wipe out your whole army. So these are some pretty far out weapons, and we understand that the Brahmastra weapon originally it was from Lord Brahma. And the Lord Brahma, he gave it to Indra. Indra gave it to Soma. And Soma gave it to Varuna. And Varuna gave it to Arjuna. So these were very special gifts that they could be given to those who were properly qualified. It was not just a whimsical thing throwing these weapons around. There were some weapons that they would come out in a chute, and then they would be spikes and darts and all kinds of nails and things, and they would just be thrown all like rain all over the whole armies. Pretty nasty. Lord Shiva, of course, he was in charge of the Pasupati. Vayu, in charge of the hurricane winds. We know what damage that can do living here in Florida. And the wind and the different violent storms. And then, of course, there was the sleeping weapon. I'm not sure who was in charge of that weapon. But all of a sudden, it's described that what Arjuna had the name, what, Gudakesh, conqueror of sleep? Because on the battlefield, the worst enemy actually is you get tired and you can't stay awake anymore, then you fall asleep, you're finished, right? So this was something they always had to fight with sleep. Yamaraj, he had a in charge of a special mace weapon and a noose weapon. Of course, there's that nice pastime of Lord Krishna fighting with Lord Shiva, and that's when they really got throwing all these weapons around. And finally came the Shiva Dwara and then the Narayana Dwara, the ultimate weapons. The Narayana Astra you can only use one time. I'm not sure exactly what it does, but I guess once is enough. So these are just some of the weapons that were used. Today we brag about our, like Prabhupada says, the machine guns and things like that, these gross weapons. We brag about them every day on the internet, on the news. You'll see some country somewhere showing off their latest weapon, right? And the cost of those weapons, millions, trillions of dollars just for like one aircraft carrier. Trillions of dollars but lists all the little things on there. So, yeah, so there's a competition, you know, who's got the greatest toys to play around with. And, of course, so many innocent people are killed because they just are so gigantic and so unrefined that innocent people are killed. So it's nothing to really brag about at all. The Veda culture, much more refined. And we understand that, of course there are these gross weapons, but there's a subtler weapon. Sometimes it's described as being razor sharp. Anybody knows what that is?
Speech.
Right, the tongue can be can hurt you to the core. It can be something that can, words can destroy someone, put someone down, so much so that they'll never forget those words the rest of their life. Very powerful words. And so easily thrown around because it's described that the tongue is the most voracious and difficult to control. So luckily we have some means of controlling that. So this is definitely a weapon, the tongue. So one, it can also be good. It can be healing with nice sweet words and it can be encouraging, but it can also be a very serious weapon. And then even more fine than the speech is our thoughts. We're not held responsible for the thoughts, but they're very contaminating. I don't know if it's ever happened to you, but sometimes, you know, before japa or something, the first thing you wake up in the morning, you think bad about something or someone. And then the rest of your japa is like contaminated. You can't get that, you feel bad, you know, you're lamenting that you thought bad about a person. So it's heavy. Even the psychologists will describe that it will destroy you from the inside out, your mind, and it's described as an enemy. It's a very serious weapon, and therefore it needs to be controlled in a very serious manner, very contaminating. And then even more refined than that, is what we're hearing here, is mantra, is this ability of spiritual sound. That all these weapons, they aren't just something you pick up at a store, all these, you know, hill weapon, a mountain weapon, but they're called, they're summoned, they're through vibration, through sound vibration. Amazing how that can be done. It's just really so subtle. We even hear of flying carpets and things like that. They're really were such a thing because they could elevate through sound. It might be even the reason how the Egyptian pyramids came about. When I was in Cambodia at Angkor Wat, we were taken around and shown these incredible stone buildings. I mean, tons, a whole city of carved stone. There's no stone around there. There's no mountains or anything, rocks around there. It's jungle. But you can see way far away there was some little ragged mountains or something. So how did they get those over there? When I was there, they had some machinery, big cranes trying to put these things back together. No such things were around. The sound. I was in South India visiting some Shiva temples, and the tour guide said, "How do you think these temples were made 3,000 years ago?" And he said, "By mantra." You think of Vishwakarma, how he made all these fancy buildings and everything, by mantra. So these could also invoke these very powerful destructive weapons. I was discussing with someone about Lord Chaitanya when he was born. And we were reading about how all the ladies came together on like the name giving ceremony and everything like that. They were chanting mantras and mantras and mantras also for protection. Nisringa mantras, so many different protective mantras. So this is also a very wonderful art that even the ladies knew, that they were there so that they could use them to protect their children. So this was a wonderful thing. And of course, Lord Chaitanya has given us the Maha Mantra, the greatest mantra to deliver our minds from all this contamination that we've been accumulating, collecting, storing within our minds and our thoughts and our hearts. So what greater gift than this Maha Mantra? And it's recommended by the Lord himself. If you just take this Maha Mantra and vibrate it and listen to it in a humble state of mind, you can wipe out all these nasty enemies within ourselves and even conquer the pride that got us here in this mess in the first place. So this is very refined but very powerful weapon, and I think it's catching on. I think people are understanding that there is something to mantra. You know, the chant and be happy. If you look at the cover of the chant and be happy, it says, you know, George Harrison, it says the power of mantra. And I use that a lot when I'm distributing books. See, even George Harrison said the power of mantra. What did Prabhupada say? He said, don't even bother about getting initiated, George Harrison. Just keep chanting this mantra. The sound vibration is working. So people are becoming more conscious. I think they're hungry to get a mantra. They realize it's something out of this world, that it's a precious thing. So we have to become expert in presenting this Maha Mantra in an attractive way. And of course, our youth have done that in first class way with their chanting and their CDs and their yoga demonstrations and everything, chanting. So this is a wonderful thing, but it has to be put in the proper hands. And we can see here's discussing about Dronacharya. Dronacharya was he received a lot of his training on weapons from his father. But after that, when he left his father, he had heard that Parshuram was giving out things. And so he actually visited, and it was, I guess, kind of like a transitional yard sale. I don't know what he was giving away, but the weapons were left. And he said, I'll take those weapons. And so Dronacharya received many of these weapons, and he was, of course, expert at using them. And so he was wandering around looking for the disciples, because here it's described that even a Brahmin, he needs to teach. That's his propensity. He just needs to teach and instruct people. He feels gifted, and that's his desire. No matter what it is here, Dronacharya had this military science, the Dhanur Veda, within him. And so he was wandering around, and he'd heard about that the young Pandavas and Kurus were getting near the age of being instructed. So he was wandering around, and it just so happened that the Pandavas and Kauravas were young boys, and they were playing a game. It's very much like cricket. It's called Kara. And so they were playing, and the ball fell into a well. And they didn't know how to get it out. They were very small. There was no way they could go down in there. So they were standing there wondering what to do, and they looked over, and they saw this very dark figure over there. And then he inquired, what's the matter, boys? He goes, well, look, our ball is down in the well. How can we get it out? And he said, just see. And he took a piece of straw, and he threw it and pierced the ball. And then he took another piece of straw, and that straw went into the other straw, and made a big, long thing, and he was able to pull it out. And the boys were like, wow. What can we do for you? We want to reward you. And he goes, just go back and tell Bhishma that you saw this dark figure and that he was pretty, you know, tell him what I did. And so sure enough, the word got out, and he goes, ah, that must be Dronacharya. And so he actually got the employment of teaching these young boys. And we've heard recently about how he favored his son, Ashwatthama. But he also had a liking for Arjuna, because Arjuna was very easily trainable and very, very skilled. And so So there's some stories that have to do with that. One story is that they were called to test after some training, and Dronacharya had put a false bird in a tree and asked each one, okay, now you aim at that bird. And so they were aimed, and they said, what do you see? And some of them would say, I see the bird and the tree. Another one would say, I see the bird, the tree, and I see my student, the students, and I see my teacher. And okay, very nice. And then Arjuna came up and he said, what do you see? He says, I see the eye of the bird. That's all I see. And so he was very impressed with his ability to really concentrate and be a serious student. And that, again, he tested them one time, and it just so happened, I think it was in the movie, I think it was like a mechanical crocodile, or anyway, somehow or other he was being attacked, Dronacharya was being attacked by a crocodile, and he called out, you know, help, help, and all the boys were standing there, and it's thrashing around, you know, and it's, you know, oh, I might miss and get my teacher, you know, and how do I get the crocodile? And Arjuna said, and he took his bow and five arrows, he pierced the crocodile. And Dronacharya was so pleased, that's when he gave him the Brahmastra weapon. And because he could see, this person is qualified. Now I'm going to give this gift. So Arjuna, actually on the battle for Kurukshetra, all those other things that I talked about, all those weapons, he actually had all those weapons, and he used them throughout the battle. So this is Dronacharya was really pleased with Arjuna, and so therefore in this particular thing, Draupadi is saying, come on, you gotta respect him, you know. And even though he's the son of, he's the son of the Brahmin, you still respect it. So this was, something that Draupadi had on mind. But we heard yesterday, I won't go into all that. So anyway, being qualified or not, we have received the Maha Mantra. And this can dissipate all these misconceptions that we've had about ourselves. And it could for the whole world, if the whole world would chant the Hare Krishna mantra, they would realize that, yes, this nation was here before I got here, and it's going to be here after, and everything should be used in Krishna's service, and why don't we all just be all nice, peaceful, the whole, everybody work together. But Prabhupada said there will never be peace in this world. So, but there's still need for weapons, and but for we need to get this weapon more widespread. It's free of charge, Prabhupada said. We give it to everybody. And it, of course, if we have to work on it, becoming peaceful ourselves during this difficult time when we don't have kirtans every day, you know, lively kirtans, we haven't, you know, come together, you know, really, you know, made it into one of those fantastic, you know, whole temples just, you know, off their feet type thing. We have to resort to really merging ourselves into our japa or bhajans, our private kirtans, whatever, and really try to absorb ourselves into really appreciating the holy name, that it is non-different than Krishna. That's why it's Maha. That's why it's the greatest thing, because it is Krishna directly. That's all we're getting, the Maha Mantra. And we have to know the art of actually giving it also. Not giving just our ability to do a nice kirtan, but to really give the Maha Mantra so that everyone can hear that mantra and take it to heart. There's one story. Arjuna heard of one Brahmin in town that his son was untimely died. And so Arjuna, thinking that I have all the weapons in the world, nothing can stop me from making this not that I can, that the son will not die again. I'll take care of everything. Because this Brahmin had lost faith that no one can stop this. And Arjuna is thinking, I have all the weapons, I can stop it no matter what. But this is one time when his weapons didn't work. And he stayed up all night when the Brahmin was going to give, Brahmin's wife was going to give birth again, and sure enough, it was fine and everything. He had every kind of, you know, fortification around and everything. But then the child died. And so then there's that very nice story of how... actually, during that time, he invoked one weapon that was given to him by Lord Shiva. And although it didn't work, before he invokes the weapon, he gave his respects to Lord Shiva for giving him that specific weapon. And so even though it didn't work afterwards, he gave his respects again, because he had the faith that what has been given by this great devotee is special. Later on he realized that after they went all the way through all the universes and Brahmajyoti and across the Viraja, then they went to see Mahavishnu, and Mahavishnu said, yeah, I just want some darshan, you know, that's why the whole thing happened. But you could see the respect that they had for this mantra. So we might be chanting for so many years and maybe not getting that highest realization, the highest pleasure that we expect from the Maha Mantra, but every day we give our respects to Lord Chaitanya. We thank Lord Chaitanya, we thank Prabhupada for that mantra. And even though after years and years of not reaching this perfection, still we give respects. And that respect is that we keep chanting, that we have the faith that this mantra, this astra, this weapon will work. And we do know that it does work, because gradually some of the dirt is being scraped off a little bit of our heart, and we can see that this is the absolute truth, and that the greatest thing we could do is to give this mantra to everyone we see. And so Lord Chaitanya, he didn't bring any weapons except for two, and that is the Maha Mantra and his beauty. But we do. We know that if we don't have any luck with the Maha Mantra on people, then we do pull out that secret weapon. And that's the ISKCON bullet, the big weapon, the gulab jamun or whatever prasadam we have. There's one nice story of, I think Prabhupada was with some scholar or something, and I think it was a Kripa, what's his name? The old sannyasi. Guru Kripa was there or something like that. And he just wasn't getting anywhere with this person. Finally he said, well, just take him out and give him some prasadam. And he was all kind of gussied up with nice shoes and thing. So it's that they had gulab jams, and the man, oh no, I don't want. He wouldn't even take the prasadam. And finally he said, no, you must take. And he took it and he bit it, and of course the juice ran down his tie, it said, onto his black patent leather shoes. But then he said, I'll take another one. I love that story. Of how irresistible our weapon is in the form of prasadam. So even now with it not being able to go out and really do our Harinam and our Kirtan so much, and because there's hardly anyone on the streets, and they got their car windows rolled up and everything. But at least, you know, we have prasadam distribution. They just got glorified in London for how many plates they're doing now with the habit, this whatever called thing going on. And in India and so many different places, really escalated prasadam distribution, because it is a weapon. So we are equipped. We definitely have this, you know, this astro throwing program together. We throw out the holy name and the sweet balls, and of course Prabhupada's books. So this is all by our spiritual master's mercy and Lord Chaitanya's mercy. So we should have faith and continue in the process with more enthusiasm and more seriousness, and And hopefully we'll be able to go back to our regular distribution soon. So anyone has any comments? I see Sri Devi over there. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Akuti Prabhu. Question about righteous wars. So the Battle of Kurukshetra was considered like a righteous war, and it was Krishna's desire that this war take place. But since that battle, have there been any other like righteous wars, or have they all just been, karmic reactions?
I was a lousy history student, so I don't know. I know that England had so many crusades, all those crusades. That was supposedly a religious war. Anybody know of any super religious wars that were bona fide type things? Even those were...
Those were pretty evil, yeah. The crusades, so I don't...
A lot of them were just to gain political power and things like that, and they were hoarding the jewels and stuff. So, I don't know if any have been really sanctioned by Lord Krishna to happen. Our consciousness is so polluted with fruit of desires that it's hard to say.
After Kurukshetra, like Kali Yuga took place, so probably in Kali Yuga there were no righteous wars. I mean, that's just a speculation.
Yeah, I would have to speculate. I wouldn't know. But the kingly order had some wars to keep things together a long time ago, to demand people to follow their instructions, and hopefully they were Rajarshis, they were saintly kings. But the saintly kings at some time, no more. Madamati?
Yes, it was sanctioned by Krishna because he wanted Yudhishthira Maharaj to rule, but really, like, you're talking about how Dronacharya was so affectionate and gave all that to Arjuna, and then Arjuna, them being in opposition, they were good people. It's like so mind-boggling when you really think about that war, the Mahabharata, it's not like just good and evil.
It became very sour, the taste for Dhritarashtra, for his power and everything, it soured the whole situation.
Yeah.
And that really was really shown when Gandhari had to step in to, when they were going to disrobe Draupadi. They all punked out, and she was the only one that had it together to say, "You guys are in Maya. What are you letting this happen?" So yeah, the sour. It was like a culture from Dhritarashtra. It went through the whole thing, and it affected Dronacharya and Kripacharya. They were affected, but ultimately it was the plan of the Lord.
Yeah.
But we should learn from that. That a bad thing can be very bad for a lot of people if it's allowed to spread. So therefore, there is such things as government and justice. When a bad thing happens, it has to be destroyed. But with Brahminical advice along with it. Now, the presidents and all these leaders, they think they're like Brahmins, so they know exactly what to do. They aren't Kshatriyas. They just tell those what to do. But they're thinking they're the Brahmin class, but they don't have their head on straight. So, yeah, things are topsy-turvy, Professor.
Hare Krishna, Hare Kriti. I just said, I just really want clarification, because we're talking about the Brahmastra quite often during this chapter. You said it came from Dronacharya, but then you also gave the lineage, it came from Brahma to Indra to Soma to Varuna, and then Varuna to Arjuna. Which one is it?
I imagine it was given to other people too. I mean, Ashwatthama could, he had it also, right? Maybe other people had, I don't know, the master weapons, like even like Parshuram, and people like that. It was something that you could give to, it's not like just one. So it could be given in different, by different
One
leaders.
Person can give it to others yeah. more than once.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I was like given a mantra. That's pretty much what it was, a mantra. And of course, at that time when Karna went to invoke the mantra and he forgot it because he was cursed by Parshuram because he went to him for instruction saying that he was a Kshatriya, but he was that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, but he saw him as a Brahmin and he could tell him he wasn't a Brahmin because when he was being bitten by that creepy thing on his leg, that he just stood it, you know, just buried it, you know, bit, but called biting the bullet, you know. And when he woke up and said, "There's no way you could be a Brahmin and tolerate something like that," so he forgot that mantra. Yeah. So he also was expert in all these different arts. So I imagine it wasn't just. Dronacharya wasn't the only one that had it.
Okay.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Mahamantra Astra ki jai.